Just remain standing for the reading of the gospel. This is the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to St. John, 6th chapter, starting the first verse. After this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And a large crowd was forming around him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with disciples. Now the Passover feast of the Jews was at hand. And lifting up his eyes then and seeing that a large crowd was coming towards him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii would not buy enough bread for each one of them to eat just a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." And now there was much grass in the place, and so the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. Jesus then took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated. So also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they'd eaten their fill, he told the disciples, "Gather up the leftover fragments, that nothing may be lost." And so they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten. When the people saw the sign that had been done, they said, "This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world." Perceiving then that they were about to take him and by force make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. So the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. You may be seated. Thanks, Jeff, Colton, Tamara. It's really good to be together. Over the next 3 weeks, I want to teach out of the Gospel of John, specifically out of the 6th chapter. So we're going to spend 3 weeks in chapter 6 of this Gospel, because to give you a little bit of context as to why I'm doing that, back at the end of December, just as it was turning over, the year was turning over into 2018, a few of the key leaders here at VIA went out, kind of hung out together for a few days and just spent some time together sharing life and praying and kind of seeking God for vision. And in the midst of that time, God put John 6 on my heart. And we started to kind of lean into it a little bit already on that week. But it's come back to me as we've been heading into our fall and into this next season for us as a church in a really fresh way. I think there's some important things in this chapter that are going to speak in a very shaping way for us in this season, that they're going to give us a little bit of an idea or a perspective about how we step into the things that God's calling us to. Last week, we talked a little bit about what it is to be a church who steps out in faith, who steps into the things that God's calling us to, not by our might or by our power, but by the Spirit. And I think this passage is going to give us a little bit of the meat to hang on the bones, so to speak. An ability to say, how do we do that, Chad? What does it look like for us to tangibly do that? Not just to get excited about it, not just to kind of talk about it theologically or philosophically, but to talk about it practically. And certainly Monday nights when we get together, we'll really be digging into the how-to. How do I do that as Chad? Because God has put me together in a very unique way with unique passions and gifts. And over the past number of months, I've been asking that question personally. Those of you close to me know that. And God's been bringing clarity and answers to those things. And so as a church, we're going to do that together this year. But over the next couple of weeks, we'll look at John chapter 6. And I think it's going to inform some of that, today's message especially. This story at the beginning of John chapter 6, of the feeding of the 5,000, is found in all 4 Gospels. You heard me just read it to you. I can sum it up for you really quickly one more time, and then we're going to break it down a little bit. But Jesus and his disciples are in the middle of a very successful season of ministry. Everywhere they go, crowds are following them around. And when they say crowds here in this part, we actually get numerical values attached to that. We're not talking about 50 to 100. We're not talking about hundreds. We're talking about thousands. That 5,000 men meant probably many of their wives and children as well, servants, that up on that mountainside, there would have been thousands of people, all of them who haven't come because there was like an event or a revival scheduled, but because they've chased Jesus down, they've seen what he's doing, the story tells us, and they come to find him. They got to be where he is. They want in on what's happening. And so thousands have come. They're there on the mountainside with Jesus. He's gone to a desolate place to be by himself. And we know Jesus to be a man of prayer. And that was his intention in the midst of a busy season of life. But when he lifts his eyes and sees this crowd, it says that he's moved with compassion towards them. And he turns to his disciples and recognizing that this group of people in front of him has needs, says, how do we feed them? So he puts his disciples kind of on the spot in the moment. His disciples begin to offer up, some of them very, very unhelpful answers. Some of them offer up the best answer they've got, even though it doesn't seem like enough. And Jesus takes what they bring to the table, and we see one of the greatest miracles of Jesus' ministry. As he takes bread and wine, blesses them, and sees them multiplied from the meal of one man to food enough to feed thousands. I think that this story is one of a few moments, but in this season of Jesus' life with the disciples, that is a real turning point for the disciples. This is a real turning point in the life of Jesus and in his ministry. Up until this point, he's called these guys to come and follow him, and they've taken him up on that. They've been following him around. He's doing all kinds of incredible things, and they're there in the wings watching and supporting kind of as best they can from behind the scenes. Here in these stories, Jesus starts to then take them and launch them into the limelight. He begins to take them and say, now you go do what you've seen me doing. He takes them from a place of only following to a place of faith in action. These guys have begun to put their faith in Jesus just by their following. They're fought to leave their boats, to leave their families, to come and to follow us, to leave successful tax collecting businesses, medical practices, to follow this guy, all of a sudden is going to the next level. That was faith in that moment, and now in this season, Jesus is going, you've done well, can I turn up the heat in the faith department? Now, I don't just want you to walk away from something, I want you to step into something. And these guys respond with, I think, like questions and responses to what we would. So let's look a little bit at this, because there's three things specifically I want to pull out of this today that I think shape a little bit of our marching orders as a church right now. What is it that we are going to do in this season? What is it that we're called to that we want to do together? And the first thing is, taken from this example of Jesus and what he does with the disciples here, because I think we're in a similar season. I think after our first couple of years together, of being together and following with Jesus, having him pour into us, that he's beginning to call us to faith and action. And so as we go to step in a like way to these guys, let's pay attention to how this looks. So the first thing that happens here, I think, is that Jesus calls these guys to set the table. And so we're going to use that language. So John chapter 6, verses 5 through 9, Jesus lifts up his eyes. He sees this crowd of people. All four of the Gospels tell this same story. But John's Gospel really has a whole lot more of a theological kind of agenda to it. Ecclesial agenda to it. He's trying to teach something to the church with this story in like, I don't know if you've ever read Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, the kind of the Narnia series. My favorite is when they get C.S. Lewis is quoted as saying, it wasn't an allegory, it was just a story. Have you heard that? He would never come right out and admit that, you know, the Aslan was Jesus. Like but it was obvious, right? And I think that's John. It's not like right there, but he's telling this story in the context of the early church. John's Gospel is written a little later, and he's speaking it into the local church to say, here's a story from the Gospels, here's a story from Jesus' life that has implication for us today in a major way. We should learn from this. But the other Gospels, they tell the story, trying to tell us something about Jesus, what it is to follow him, what it looks like when we follow him. And so we get some differentiation between the way they tell it, but primarily, I think, because their intention or their purpose in telling the story is slightly different. Jesus, seeing the crowds, he turns to his disciples and asks them, how do we feed these people? In the other Gospels, it shows the disciples coming to Jesus and saying, we have a problem. You've been preaching way too long. Right? He's like the ultimate preacher. He's just been going on and on. Like, it's so long. It's getting late in the day. These people came. They didn't make plans. There's no food. Like, they're going to start passing out. They need to eat. You need to send them to find food. Jesus, made aware of the problem, made aware of the need, then turns, instead of just solving the problem on his own in the way they're suggesting, he turns it back on them and says, you feed them. In John's account, we get Philip's response first. Philip looks at Jesus and he says, a year's wages wouldn't feed these people. And like, we're on this journey together. You know our bank account. Like, it's impossible. We can't. How would we do that? So Philip's just immediately struck by the impossibility of what they're being asked for. Andrew comes in behind him, and instead of responding the same way, I'd like to look at it this way. I think what Andrew does is Andrew shows us what the Bible refers to as a mustard seed of faith. Andrew steps up with much of the same thought and worry as Philip, but he gives to Jesus one man's lunch. Here's five barley cakes, and some fish. I was reading one commentary of this barley cake thing. What's a barley cake, right? It's kind of like a rice cracker. It's like, and as I read it in the commentaries, it's poor man's food. Mm-hmm. So they've not even got like a good lunch.
No, it's
like panic. Yeah, like they got lunch from this guy who couldn't even afford wheat. They got five barley cakes and a couple of fish. And Andrew looks at what they have. He hears what Jesus is saying. And he gives it to him with a statement or a question, kind of like, hey, what could you do with this? Now, the way the question's worded in the scriptures, it's definitely, you know, kind of pregnant with this sense of doubt. Like, it's a mustard seed of faith. Like, I don't know if you can do anything with this. Like, it's sort of like that. But he gives it to him. He brings what he has, even though it's so little, and doesn't seem like it would measure up or at all meet the need, and he presents it to Jesus. That, I think, is amazing. I think that's harder than if he had somehow had a hookup with a giant truck full of food. And he says, I got an idea. Instead, he steps out with what requires amazing faith and says, Jesus, what could you do with this? In some ways, what we see here with Andrew is a man who's stepping out, he's putting his faith in Jesus into action. I mean, the question should be rhetorical. Like, what can you do with this? Well, not much. Right? Like in any other instance. But there's something happening in Andrew as he's walked with Jesus that thinks, just maybe if I was to give him this, something could happen here. And so he brings what he has and he gives it to Jesus. And I think here as a church community right now in this season of our life, we have seen, and I've talked with many of you, you're well aware of the need that's around us. You're aware of the need for the gospel that surrounds us in the world that we live in the lives of the people that you rub shoulders with every day. You walk through this world and even made aware of it in acute ways as you begin to try and share the gospel, right? Or to bring the Spirit, to bring the kingdom into situations and feel the resistance or the pushback. You can see the hunger, but you can also see the impossibility of the situation. And we talked about this last week. That the reality of it is, kingdom work is always divine in its nature. That flesh and blood does not do divine things. And we are flesh and blood. Only as we walk in the Spirit can we enter into kingdom things. And so there is this right piece of us that would respond to the world around us, to the need around us, to the hunger around us that goes far deeper than physical hunger. And not say like Philip, a year's wages couldn't feed these people. Like, I don't know what you're asking. And to get frustrated, to find ourselves at the end of our means and our rope really fast. But I think here as a church right now in this season, something very similar to what's happening here in this moment is happening for us. Where Jesus is saying, look at where I've put you in this beginning stage as a community, the size that you are, who you are, with what you bring to the table. And I'm calling you now to step out, to put your faith into action. Luke chapter 17, the apostles say to the Lord, Lord, increase our faith. And I think that in response to what it is that we, where we stand on the precipice of as a community, is a right thing. That we, if we get it, we would quickly begin to cry out the same. Lord, increase my faith. Because God is calling us to step out in faith. I had a friend that often referred to faith this way. He used this analogy of jumping off the high diving board into a swimming pool. And when I think about that, I try and put myself not in the shoes of Chad at, 42, who's done that a lot, but in the shoes of Chad, who's like 13, doing it for the first time. Right? Because I think that's where faith comes in. Never having stepped off from that high before. And you step up to the edge of that diving board, and there's a nervous excitement. I'm going to do this, right? It's what got you to the top. And you step up to the edge of the diving board, you look down in the pool to realize there's no water in it. And just when you thought you'd been pushed to the end of your faith, Jesus says, oh, don't worry about that. I'll fill the water with pool by the time you get there. You just jump. That's faith. And that's what's happening here in John chapter 6. As we continue to watch, you'll see it. Jesus is pushing these guys to the limits of their faith. And I love Luke chapter 17, Lord, increase our faith. Jesus' response back is, I tell you this, with faith like a mustard seed, you tell that mulberry tree to uproot itself and plant itself out there in the sea, and it'll do it. With faith like Andrew's. And so I believe God's calling us to set the table. He's calling us to come and to bring what we have and to lay it out. To set the table, to put it out like a feast. 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, like a feast for thousands. And to do that requires faith. So we're going to set the table. We're going to come every week and we're going to bring what we have. And we're going to bring it as the best we can. And we're going to set it out like a feast for thousands. We're going to set it out for the hungry. We're going to set it out in impossible ways and impossible places. And we're going to do it because in us is that mustard seed of faith, like is in Andrew, to believe that God could do something with 5 loaves and 2 fish. Like, we're going to set the table, but we're certainly not going to do it in a cocky manner. We're going to set the table in a humble way to say, Lord, what could you do with this? As what we have to bring the table increases, we'll bring that too. But the need will, like, God will continually push us to the edge of our faith. I think this will be something that will mark us as a community forever, that we will be people who are committed to set the table no matter what. And then having set the table, we'll move into the second thing. I've got 3 things today. One, we're going to set the table. The second thing is we're going to invite to that table. And so in this season, you'll hear me ask you. You'll hear me say from here. You'll hear each other encouraging one another, praying together about this thing of invitation. Because I think God's calling us to be active, to actively step into our faith. And one of the exercises of that faith will be to be prayerfully inviting. To be taking risks to reach out to friends and family and the community around us. And to say, hey, why don't you come? We're having a feast. Come and eat with me. I know there's a chair there for you because it's right beside mine. We're going to come to this feast together. And so there comes this this spirit of invitation. You see it in John chapter 6. If you look at Where does that happen? Verse 10. And I love the way this happens, this invitation thing, because it's still really solidly in the realm of faith. Jesus has the disciples invite people to the table while he's still just got 5 loaves and 2 fish in his hands. He hasn't multiplied it yet. So everything to this point has happened behind the scenes. It's the disciples and Jesus. And then Jesus puts them in this really precarious position by inviting thousands to take a seat in the grass. It's interesting. Every synoptic writer and John refer to this fact, that they all got to sit down in beautiful grass. Immediately conjures up for me ideas of Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. I have everything I need. He makes me lie down where? And so Jesus invites this multitude to sit down in green pastures to rest. The disciples are saying, send them on their way. Tell them to go find food. They need to get on with this. It's not our fault they didn't make plans. And Jesus says, you feed them. Guys, sit down. And thousands begin to get comfy. And Jesus is still just holding the 5 loaves and 2 fish that Andrew brought him. I mean, at this point, he's sort of kicked them off the diving board. Now faith's in action. They're looking at each other like, what is he doing? And I think there's something for us to be learned there. Often we want to get to the place where everything's figured out, polished, ready, before we ever invite anybody to it. And most of us, that looks different for different ones, what exactly we would like to see there, see him, whatever. Guys, I think Jesus is in this season releasing us to say, go and invite. Invite people to come. But we only have five bars, right? Like, just do it. Just do it. It's a step of faith. The setting the table, bringing what we have is a step of faith. The invitation is a step of faith. And inviting in some ways, like we could do something like send out a mailer. We could invite a bunch of people. Or we could run around the community and hang signs on doors. Or we could, you know what I mean? Like we could invite in those kinds of ways, and we probably will in the future. But I think God's actually calling us to something that requires more of us in a faith way right now, in that he's asking us to invite people we know. The inside of relationship he's asking us to invite, the barista we see every day, the friend who we know has just been burned by the church and hasn't been there in a long time, right? That person who you play on a team with and you've walked life with and who doesn't have a relationship with Jesus but who you know is encountering Jesus in your relationship, to invite them. And the reason why that takes more faith is if I go out and I invite strangers and they come, and Jesus doesn't multiply the loaves and the fish. It's kind of a... It's not a big deal. They just kind of go away. And it was like, oh, that was embarrassing, but at least we'll never see them again. But when I invite my friends, when I invite my family, when I invite those who are broken, needing, hungry, and who know my phone number, now I'm taking steps of faith. Now I'm stepping out into places. And that can be hard. That can be really hard for us, where in the past we've done that. We've invited people into places and the church has burned them or hurt them. We're saying, I don't want to do that again. It doesn't feel... Jesus wants to come in this season and move in our hearts and our lives in ways that would release us to set the table, bring what we have, and invite people to it unashamedly. To say, come. Because the reason that Jesus can ask those people to sit down is, if you look earlier in the passage, he's asking the disciples these questions. How are we going to do this? But not because he doesn't know. It says he did it to test them. He already knew exactly what he was about to do. And that's where our faith lies. We can set the table and invite people to it, not because we know we can pull this off, but because we know he builds his church. And not even the gates of hell can stand against him. That Jesus is able to multiply bread and fish. And so we're going to set the table, we're going to invite to it. And then the third thing is this. And this to me, it's not the most important part of the story, it just was really special to me. I thought this was really cool. Having set the table and invited, then our role as a church is to begin to host those who take us up on the invitation. Because some will say, yeah, I'm coming. And some of us are going to go, oh, okay. I didn't expect that response. This is great. Let's go. And the reality of it is, that's where the rubber hits the road. Because now, and if you look at this story, this is where Jesus steps it up and he invites the disciples to join him in this. They begin to then host this feast. They set the table, they invite, and then as Jesus does the miraculous and begins to multiply this provision, they take the food to the people. They go to them and they begin to serve them, to feed them. Jesus takes the bread, and when he had given thanks, remind you of anything? We're going to get more into the nature of this bread over the next couple of weeks as I teach. We're going to talk more about this specifically, so I won't spend a lot of time there now, but just realize this for now. Jesus takes this bread and he blesses it. He gives thanks, the Greek verb, eucharisto. He consecrates that bread. And in the blessing, the bread is no longer just bread. How do we know that? Well, five loaves don't feed thousands of people. Suddenly, this bread takes on a divine quality. Somehow, the Creator of heaven and earth is present, and the bread multiplies. Food is brought to the crowd. It's brought to the people. I love that. That having come and received the invitation to just sit in the grass, then they're not called into assembly lines to receive. They're not called back up out of the grass in order to receive. They just remain in a posture of rest. And Jesus, it says in John's gospel, Jesus takes the bread to them and begins to host this meal. I heard of a Bible camp on the coast here. I don't know if you guys do this at Mill Creek. I doubt it. But like you go to this Bible camp as youth and stuff, and they serve you your food. Like you just sit down and they just bring it to you. Crazy, right? They don't do that. They don't do that. Like where do they do that, right? But I heard about that and I just thought, wow, that's crazy. Yeah, it's amazing, right? But it's a different. The only reason I bring that up, it's not one good. It's just that picture to me. That's really special. Right? We're used to that. You go to OJ's, they bring in your food. Like, we're used to that. But these are these environments where the expectation was send them to find their own food. Jesus isn't just sort of fixing the problem. He's going the extra mile. Sit down, we'll bring it to you. John's gospel points out that Jesus serves the food. All the other three gospels show the disciples doing that. And the question's been raised by many commentators, and they talk about back and forth, who's right? Do we have two different stories here? Do we have different... From what I can tell, and all that I've read, and as I studied this passage, this is where I've landed on that. I think they're both telling the truth. Thousands of people. If one man had taken them all that bread, they would have been there for a week and a half. I think the disciples are part of this distribution process, but I also think John's right. I think Jesus served every one of them. I think that what we're seeing here and what John wants us to catch is this is a sacramental action. That as they go and they take that bread in these baskets, they've not suddenly taken on the ability to multiply bread. That what they provide, what they bring, they never came up with in the first place. They just brought what they had, and what people are benefiting from, what people are receiving, is from the hand of Jesus. We are called to set the table, to invite people to it, and then as they come, to serve them, to host that table, and to remember that at every moment, and this is where our faith should be encouraged, it should be strengthened, it is Christ who presides over his church. He is the head of the body. Corinthians teaches us. He's the one who holds it together. That every time we come and we meet, every time that I stand up, or Jeff stands up, or Alex stands up, and we open the scriptures and we begin to speak through them, understand this, that I see that as a sacramental action. That honestly, you don't need me to teach you. That my words don't hold life, but His do. And so when we come and we sit under the Word and under its teaching, we sit under Christ. So even though I bring the Word, it's Jesus who brings the Word. And every time that I stand behind the table, and every time that we serve you the bread and the wine, know clearly that this gathering is hosted not by flesh and blood, but by the divine. That you've come into the presence of the Creator of the universe, into the throne room of heaven. That even when Tamara, Melinda, or Jeff, they pull out a piano or a guitar and they begin to lead us in worship. I don't know if time, that's a whole other sermon. But even this, that God has shown, Jesus really is our chief worship leader. That if you want to know how to really enter into worship, into adoration, into thanksgiving, into supplication, watch how Jesus uses the Psalms. That throughout His life, He leads us in worship. And so as we come together and we host, we receive people. Over the next couple weeks and months, we'll begin to invite you and ask you to consider building with us, coming around, setting the table, inviting people to it, hosting people when they get here. And so practically, we'll ask some of you to help us with our children. Chris and I have talked about this. Our desire is not that our kids just come and have another daycare. It's that they come and encounter the living Christ. And so when they go into that room and you say, yeah, I'll go be there, really part of what you're saying is, yeah, I will go and I will let Jesus love these kids today through me. Some of you will ask you, and you'll agree, yeah, for sure. I will come in and I will set up all your chairs on a Sunday every three Sundays. I'll come, I'll be the one to set that up. And then once that's done, I'll wait at the door. And as people show up, mine will be the first hand they grab. And I'll welcome them here. Know that in a very real way, that as you take that hand into yours, they take the hand of Christ. And as you welcome them into this place, that by the Spirit, they don't just hear your welcome. And so we host. But ultimately, He's doing the hosting. I just love how this works. Because so much of what needed to happen here to meet the needs of the people was beyond the disciples. They were right. But it wasn't beyond Jesus. Jesus could do it, and He could have done it without them. I posit that if a man can turn 5 loaves into food for 5,000, that he could have it all just miraculously show up in their laps too. But He doesn't. He invites His people, the body of Christ, to partner with Him in kingdom work, to put their faith into action, to bring what they've got, to present it to Jesus, and to, with faith in Him and what He's promised, invite people to come and to feast. And then when they come, to receive them, to host them there at that table. At Via, we have many people in holy orders. So the reason why I wear the collar is because I've been ordained into an order, and this is part of the way that we remember that we mark that. And the beginning of those orders, I'm a priest. At the end of September, Bishop Todd's going to be here with us, and so you'll meet Bishop Todd. And so we have priests and we have bishops. But the very first, the place where we all start into our holy orders is in this place of deacon. We start there in the diaconate. It's a place that Jeff's discerning right now and stepping into some training in. And we're going to be walking that journey with him. Never as we continue into our holy orders are we ever no longer a deacon. Deacon, it just means it's the Greek verb to serve. That it's a servant. And the reason we have deacons isn't so they can do all the serving. For a while there, that one confused me. I thought, well, shouldn't we all be doing that? And a priest said to me, yeah, that's the point. The reason we put people into those positions is because we see them as set apart. We set them apart to stand in that place. But as they do it and they do it well, all of us are called up into that place of the diaconate. It's the same as for me as I stand in my place as a priest and I walk out priestly things, that it inspires and pulls all of us into our priestly nature as the priesthood of all believers. And so we set the diaconate apart to model it for us, to exemplify it for us. Ultimately, they're not even setting the example. They're following one. Christ, who though he was by the very nature of God, humbled himself as a servant. And so for us, I think this is the picture around hosting. That we do it as servants. That we come together. And so one of the practical ways that that'll happen, places that'll happen for us right now is Sunday. When we come Sunday, we come and we come ready to serve. We come ready to pour out, to meet people in humility. And to know that as we do that, we do it in the power of Christ. We do it in the Spirit. And so people's lives will be radically changed as they meet you. Radically changed as you step out, faith in action. As a side note, when they're done, Jesus asks them to take baskets and collect the leftovers. Jesus hosts such a great feast that everyone at it eats until they can't eat anymore. They eat until they're satisfied. Lo and behold, the one they put their faith in was faithful. God will be faithful to the things he's promising, to the things he's calling us into. We can trust that. That every time we set the table, invite to it, and host people at it, they will walk away full. That if they respond to that invitation and pull it, they will not walk away going, they ran out before they got to me. And it's that faith, that confidence that I think should inspire us in this season. But the other thing to recognize is Jesus says, they've all eaten to their full, now go pick up the leftovers. And the men go out with these baskets and they come back with 12 of them. 12 disciples, 12 baskets. This is just a side note. We won't dwell there long, but just know this. As you begin to step out with faith and action to begin to pour out and serve, you will not starve. That you will continue to eat at that table. And so it's not a shift for us in this season out of something into something else. It's a stepping out with what God's taught us and what he's been doing into a new season. And he will continue to be faithful to feed us, to fill us, to tend to our hearts in our journeys of healing, to teach us and equip us, to meet us where we need him to meet us. So now together, it's very fitting. Every Sunday. But today, very fitting to turn our attention to the table. To turn our hearts to the Lord's table. Where every week we set this table and we come and we feast. We come and we feed on Christ in our hearts by faith. And that at this table we would come, even personally, inside our own hearts and journeys with that kind of expectation and faith. That we won't walk away from this table hungry. And so we come just as we are. We come as people to green pastures. To be served by Christ. Wow. Jeff, would you come?